This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
This week on Meet and Three, we look at how we've adapted to a new normal during the pandemic. From the business of restauranteering and the new habits of composters, to learning from the past to prepare for the future, we're exploring what came before and what lies ahead.
People in charge of the collections and the acquisitions looked at me and were like, what the hell are you trying to sell me cookery for?
These kids are so young and we're teaching them that it's okay to throw out all this food, and we have to figure out a way to educate these students to make them, you know, lifelong environmentalists.
Tune in to Meet and Three wherever you get your podcasts for the latest stories in the world of food.
Hello, this is Lisa Held, and you're listening to The Farm Report, a Heritage Radio Network show about the people, processes, and policies that shape how food is produced today. My guest today is Tobias Fox, the founder of Newark Science and Sustainability, an organization that works on urban agriculture, renewable energy, and other projects to help create self-sustaining and environmentally friendly communities in Newark, New Jersey. Tobias, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. How are you?
So good. Welcome. I am really happy that we are talking and we're recording this podcast. You and I have had quite a lot of technical issues, but we are making it happen. And, you know, this is just the way things are during a pandemic, I guess. Well, thanks for bearing with me.
Oh, no problem. I think it has brought us closer together.
That's true. Yeah. So I want to talk a lot about your work and, you know, urban agriculture in Newark and lots of different aspects of what you do. Let's start with your community gardens. You know, this is the Farm Report. We talk a lot about farming. How did you get started with growing food in Newark?
Oh, wow. So, I have to start by saying that I was born in Newark. I grew up in East Orange, lived in Irvington. And so this is like an urban triangle, if you will. And Newark, Irvington, and East Orange has been this circle of my life. And I grew up in a household of 16. And so I've experienced every issue related to poverty imaginable. And there was no agricultural life going on in my household. My educational experience or background consists of, creative writing, book publishing, filmmaking. I'm also a photographer. And so I was deeply engaged in independent publishing as an adult for about 10 years. And then it was about 2011 is when I kind of got burnt out from that whole experience and just completely became jobless, penniless, the whole nine, you know, and I had no place to live. I was found myself sleeping on my cousin's couch, collecting food stamps, and then I was trying to figure out how do I reinvent myself from this. It wasn't until October of 2011 when someone informed me about a group of people who had marched down on Wall Street demanding economic justice. And I was curious. I wanted to know what was going on. I thought there was being some handouts was going on, and I wanted to be a part of it. So I scraped up some change, caught the PATH train from Newark into New York City, World Trade Center, walked a few blocks down to Zuccotti Park, and became indoctrinated into the Occupy Wall Street movement. And it was during that time is when I started to meet people that were growing food in rural and urban environments. And I didn't know what an urban farmer was. I didn't even know that was possible, that you can grow food in, you know, cities, until I started meeting these people. In addition to meeting renewable energy technicians, people who were transforming or creating electricity from the use of solar, wind, and pedal bike technology. And so I would say it was in the fall of 2011 that kind of opened my eyes to this. And then YouTube was becoming popular at that time. And so I started watching a lot of YouTube videos. Again, it was abstract to me because I'm watching on these videos of people growing food, but there was still no connection because I didn't know anyone personally that was doing this until I met these growers during the Occupy Wall Street movement in New York. And then I became a lead organizer for Occupy Newark in November of 2011, going into 2012. And that's when I met a renewable energy technician and electrical engineer, Newark resident, who started putting these ideas in my head about allowing him to teach us about solar technology. And then I learned at that time, in going into the spring of 2012, that the city of Newark has an adopt-a-lot program where you can adopt a vacant lot for the purchase of a dollar, and you lease that for the year, and with the purpose of transforming that vacant lot into some type of green space. And so at that time, I started organizing a lot, and so I had the ability to, and I had the professional experience of being a publisher and co-author and acquisitions editor for 10 years in publishing. And so I had that professional experience, and then I had this new skill of organizing, and I kind of combined that together to create this working group called Newark Science and Sustainability Working Group within Occupy Newark. But as the whole encampments and the Occupy movement was being dismantled, I still carried on this message through the working group, Occupy Newark, Science and Sustainability Working Group. And then we said, you know, hey, look, we learned about, it was just me and about eight other or nine other local green enthusiasts. We were just doing, you know, green stuff, I guess, you know, organizing trips to organic farms and organizing workshops around renewable energy. And then when we learned about this Adopt a Lot program in the city of Newark, I said, hey, you know, let's adopt a lot, you know, and turn it into a garden, a community garden. And we did that. And so I took this grassroots organizing approach of bringing dozens and dozens of people together to help with this transformation of this vacant lot into a community garden. But every time when we go to the garden to do some gardening activities, I would just stand around and watch. And it was these two, in particular, two middle-aged at that time, European-American women, said, Tobias, you know, we really love what you do. You're a really good organizer. You managed to bring all these people together to do this awesome work. But we realize you stand around a lot when we're in the garden. You don't know anything about gardening, do you? And I says, no, I don't. And so they says, okay, well, we're going to teach you everything we know. And they did. And so they became my mentors and teachers and helped me become a gardener and grow into the world of urban farming. And so that's how it all began for me.
Yeah, it's an incredible origin story. And I think it's really interesting because, you know, when most people think of Occupy Wall Street, they think financial inequality, but maybe they don't think about farming or food production off the bat. What about like the connection? Tell me a little bit about that connection. Like was the community garden inspiration, did a lot of it have to do with economic justice for you?
So that's a really good question. It wasn't really, for me, it wasn't about, at that time, it wasn't about economic justice. It was more so about kind of like meeting this huge disparity with our food system, getting people more connected with nutritious food, myself included. And it was almost like, you know, just kind of spiritual liberating to be able to produce your own food and make it economical, you know, at the same time. And so that was really the motivation for me. It wasn't until, you know, a few years later that we began to look at attaching in business model to this, so that way we can not only demonstrate how urban agriculture contributes to the wellness of the community, but also the local economy.
Right. So what are the community gardens that you have? What do they look like today?
So since then, again, using this whole, you know, grassroots organizing approach, I've been able to help with pulling together about 20 local growers throughout the city of Newark, gardeners and other people who identify themselves as urban farmers. And so it's about 20 of us now in a network where we organize and collaborate with one another. Everyone have different approaches to agriculture. And so, you know, some people have this community garden approach where they have different plots for different people. Some people are growing food here specifically to take to a market, such as a farmer's market. So for me, although we call our gardens, the two gardens that we have, a community garden, we don't lease out plots. And so I tell people, if you participate in the garden activities and attach yourself to the garden, then you're not assigning yourself to one portion of the garden, but the entirety of the garden, and you become a part of the entire community, which means that you help with the upkeep and management of the entire garden and not just one section of it. And why I do this is because, you know, I'm a 70s baby, and so growing up, I clearly still remember when you know, a neighbor would, you know, mow the lawn, their lawn, but also, you know, the lawn of the neighbors to the left and right of them, and then that would exchange another week or another time, that neighbor would do the same. And so it was like, you know, when it was time to shovel snow or rake leaves in front of our homes, people would share that responsibility, you know. I remember when there was a sense of community, and everyone wasn't so much thinking about themselves and the property that they attached themselves to. And so I wanted to kind of like revive that type of spirit in the growing space. And so it's a community garden, but there's no like assigned plots.
Right.
Yeah.
So everyone's kind of participating in gardening together.
Right.
And then where does the food end up?
So that was some other things that we had to kind of like trial and error, right? And so it's funny because, like, you know, you got corporations, they get, you know, millions of dollars to do trial and error, you know, more than once. You know, they get, you know, yeah. Okay, well, here's some more money, try it again, you know. But with us on this grassroots level, we, you know, we get, you know, $5,000 and we're expected to change the world, you know.
Right.
So, which is crazy. But so in the beginning, a lot of the food, you know, would a portion of it we would consume, those who participate, yes, but a large portion mm-hmm. of it would get wasted in the garden and become compost because there was no distribution system in place. And so, yes, growing food and then running up and down the street giving it to your neighbors is great, but that's not a distribution system. And so, because that comes with harvesting, storage, and knowing where it's actually going, what impact you're making from this whole system. And so it took us some time to develop this. And so from 2012 up until 2018, we were able to go through this whole trial and error stages. And so for me, with the two gardens that I manage, the People's Garden and the Garden of Hope, we developed this farm-to-table co-op which really is a CSA or Community Support Agriculture Program, where we charge $395 for its membership. And in return, those members receive 20 weeks of produce packages. And then we created this Sponsor a Family initiative, where people who like this idea of helping families receive more access to freshly grown food, they can purchase a membership and then donate it to a family in need. And so this supports our nonprofit efforts. This also supports the gardeners that are caring for these gardens. This also allows people to have more access to fresh food and have a more closer relationship where food comes from. And this also kind of help us create this distribution network of, okay, we're growing this food. Who are we growing it for? You know, and then where is it actually going, right? And so we're able to document all this and create this business model attached to it. And we still donate some produce, but it also helps kind of incentivize with the work that we're doing and help give it this business model structure as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Tobias Fox about Newark science and sustainability. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believe comfort food can be just that. Know where your food comes from. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
All right, we're back. This is Lisa Held. You're listening to the Farm Report on Heritage Radio Network. I'm here speaking with Tobias Fox of Newark Science and Sustainability. So, Tobias, we were talking a lot about the community gardens that you run in Newark before the break. And I want to ask you this question, which is I hear this argument a lot from farmers or sort of big food companies that is used to discount urban agriculture efforts. It's sort of this like, oh, it's nice, it builds community, it creates green space in neighborhoods, but it's not practical as a food source. Like, you can never grow enough food to really make a dent in people's daily food needs. Based on the work you've been doing, what do you think of that? How do you respond to that?
So we're not here to eliminate commercial farming or farming in traditional farming in rural environments. We're here to complement that work and work in collaboration with those farmers that's willing to work with us. And so I have a healthy relationship with a organic farmer in a rural environment who has a mid-sized farm that grows an abundance amount of food and has a produce CSA, meat CSA, a store on his farm. And I want to give a big shout out to that farmer, John Knox of Dogwood Farm in Hillsborough, New Jersey. And so when he introduced me to his CSA, you know, over 200 member produce CSA, over 100 member meat CSA, I says, wow, I want to see how I could replicate this in a small way in a city like Newark, where food insecurity is huge. And so where you have in more urban environments, a lot of health-related issues due to people's poor eating habits. And so it's easier for a nonprofit organization like myself, who have this driven mission, than to reach those people than a commercial farmer who's looking, whose model is designed for, you know, profit, you know? And so it helps create this kind of healthy relationship with the two. And so we receive donations from this organic farm, Dogwood Farms, to kind of support our efforts of what we're doing. And so it's not meant to replace the traditional farmer, but recognize that we're having an influx amount of people living in cities now, and we still have a high number of health issues related to people's relationship with food and poor eating habits. And so we have to draw a balance between that and say, how can we collaborate and work with each other? And so we grow a lot of food in a city like Newark. A lot of food is being grown. And so the goal is not to feed almost 300,000 people in the city of Newark, but it's also to help create more access to freshly grown produce.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also work on a lot of different projects: renewable energy, wellness and nutrition, art. What's the thread that connects all of them?
So it takes we always say, you know, it's going to take an interdisciplinary approach to create some significant changes in our society. And so we've been so compartmentalized in every aspect of our lives because we are products of our education. We've been taught that, you know, math has, you know, is separate from science. You know, science is separate from sociology. Sociology is separate from history. And so we go through our lives with this compartmentalized view. And so with our organization, we create these five pillars, which is urban agriculture, renewable energy, ecological building, eco-art, and wellness and nutrition. And we kind of show the interconnectedness of these disciplines and use this interdisciplinary approach to create some meaningful changes in our communities. And so that's our approach. And so we collaborate with like-minded peoples, you know, people who are artists, but they're also herbalists, and they're also, you know, art therapists, and they're also gardeners, you know. And so my skill sets is just like, yeah, you know, I'm an organizer, but I'm also, you know, a photographer. I'm also, you know, an urban farmer and so forth. And we just come together in a very constructive way where we can deliver hands-on learning activities and new creative ways of reaching people.
Yeah, it makes me think a lot about a word that is now used a lot in social justice movements, which is intersectionality. It seems like, you know, what you're talking about, the way all these different things overlap and intersect with each other. And it's interesting to me because you kind of started with Occupy Wall Street. And I'm curious, did that activism and this kind of commitment to intersectionality, did it carry through? And are you participating in the current movements around Black Lives Matter? And is that also connected to the work you're doing?
That's a great question. So what I think with the Occupy Wall Street movement, because I had never seen anything like this before in my life. I thought, you know, having rallies and protests, I thought that was a thing of the past. It was something that was great in the 60s. Why are we still doing this way? Until I became an active participant in the Occupy Wall Street movement. But I started out as like an observer, because this, I have never seen anything like this before. It completely blew me away. I'm attending different working groups and all this stuff. And so it planted a seed inside of me, and that which led me to doing the work that I'm doing. And so with regards to Black Lives Matter, I think it's great. And so, I mean, I'm going to say this about Black Lives Matter and how it's being presented today, is that if you kind of look at take history from a very broad perspective, you know, but we always separate African-American history and Latin American, all this stuff is always separate from American history. But if you take American history from this broad perspective, with all these other cultures involved in the full spectrum of American history, it's a sad but beautiful story of how we've been taking this long shift from slavery to segregation to, you know, to this level of integration. But now, where you see so many different cultures being able to rally against injustice all over the world, you know, you can only think that the next stage of all this is some, you know, world unification, you know, where technology is actually helping to increase our levels of empathy. And it also kind of pull institutional racism out of the shadows and expose its ugliness for what it really is, you know? And so these disparities that we have, and I tell people, like, embedded in the fabric of our social system is, you know, racism, classism, sexism, and all these other isms that really destroys us as human beings. And this is really starting to come to light. And I'm thankful to be a witness of it and an active participant in the form that I know how to be, right? And that is through food justice, food insecurity, food access. You know?
Right. And yeah, those are connected in so many different ways to that history and what you know, the kind of justice that people are fighting for today. And I mean, food sovereignty, you're doing this in communities, like you said, in Newark, that have, I'm sure, very high rates of food insecurity and food access challenges. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about this term that you use a lot. I saw your TEDx talk, and you use this term glocal.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about what that means?
Yes. So, you know, we think global, but act local, and that's glocal. And so I tell people, look, I may not know how to single-handedly solve world hunger, but I do know how to transform a vacant lot into a community garden so the residents in that community have access to fresh, healthy food. I can do that, you know, and so, and all I can do is begin to empower other people and inspire other people to do the same in their communities. And so, you know, and so, you know, we think about this, you know, the world globally and the challenges that the world is dealing with. But what can you do in your own community that could bring about some significant change in someone else's life? And so we think global and act local, and that's glocal.
Very cool. We're going to wrap up in a minute. But before we do, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the future. I know you're working on a new project that is a sort of a multi-use space. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yep. And so out of this group of 20 growers that I'm that I collaborate with within the city of Newark, we are Newark Science Sustainability. We are the first ones that are going from leaseholder to landowner. And so we've acquiring three properties from the city of Newark. Two of those properties will be combined and redeveloped into a year-round sustainable urban farm where we'll have a hydroponic greenhouse so we can grow leafy greens, herbs, and microgreens year-round. We'll also have this rustic cafe-style facility with a restroom where we can display and sell added-value products. We'll have a farm stand on site. We have some chickens. We'll have a walk-in cooler where we can store produce. We'll have a commercial kitchen to enhance our wellness and nutrition initiatives with cooking demonstrations and so forth. We'll be collecting rainwater, which will feed into the greenhouse. We'll also have some solar technology to help offset some of our energy costs. And so this is the redevelopment of the Garden of Hope. We are expected to start the construction sometime in July, early August. And then the third property that we are acquiring from the city, which will be redeveloped into a cafe-style farmer's market. It's a four-level development project. And so the first level would be a cafe-style farmer's market, second level office space, third level some apartments, and then we'll have a green roof as well. And so those are the major projects we're working on.
Yeah, you got a lot coming up. Has the pandemic slowed anything down for you? Has it affected the progress?
Oh, absolutely. And so one, I had came back from the Philippines on March 15th. And it's like when I got back, the whole world had fallen apart. Luckily, I made it back in time before the Philippines had shut down the airport, or otherwise I would have been there to this day. So it's just five of us, managing this organization. And so a large portion of our workforce are interns and volunteers. And so all of that stopped. Interns and volunteers came to a complete halt. And the advancement of the construction projects came to a complete halt because City Hall shut down. And so it really impeded our progress. And now we're trying to play catch up,
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like a really exciting project. And thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about all you do with urban agriculture in Newark.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you all so much for listening to the Farm Report on Heritage Radio Network. If you enjoyed the conversation, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and share it. I'll see you next week. The Farm Report is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Just enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.